thank you, guys. Let's get started on our after-break soil fertility plant nutrition session, and we'll have Paul DeLon come up again, please, to talk about impact of cover crops on Texas rolling plains cotton production. Paul?
Thank you, Kevin. I'm going to talk about the impact of cover crops on Texas rolling plains. If you've got a farm magazine or anything in the last 2-3 years, you've probably seen this NRCS, Unlock the Secrets of the Soil, really pushing soil health through implementation of cover crops. Cover crops are not a new concept, but they're really pushing it, and it's kind of like reinventing the wheel, so to speak, but there's a lot of interest. There's a National Cover Crops Conference back in the spring, but they estimated there's currently 2 million acres of cover crops in the U.S., and they had a goal. They want to reach 20 million acres by the year 2020. So they're really pushing for cover crops and its use. As I said, cover crops are not new. What's the history in Texas, rolling plains, and West Texas? Basically, this is kind of the negatives, showing winter cover crops do not appear to be a viable option in the rolling plains. The major factor is limited soil moisture for establishment and then removal of soil moisture by those cover crops. And then Todd Bauman there at Vernon reported cotton lint yields reduced when the cover crop was used in combination with no-till cotton. Dr. Keating out at Lubbock showed that he could obtain a protected ground cover about 69% of the time. And the big if, I probably should have that highlighted, that's if you plant the right species and then you have the rainfall to germinate that and for that plant to survive. And he noted several legume species failed due to inadequate moisture. Back in the rolling plains, Dozier concluded legume cover crops do not provide adequate biomass or nitrogen contributions to justify the seed and the planting cost of doing that. Kind of on the positive side, researchers noted higher soil moisture availability and conservation tillage systems when cover crops compared to conservation tillage systems without cover crops in the rolling plains. We've always looked at, for several years, since 2007, wheat or rye as a cover crop, and shown no impact on lint yields when we incorporate those cover crops in our systems. Of course, time determination becomes more critical, especially as you move further west in the U.S., and practices that are perceived to reduce the capability of the soils to capture that rainfall and store that soil moisture is going to hinder adoption. That's our number one question in this part of the world, is what's going to happen to soil moisture if we incorporate cover crops. So even though we've been doing wheat as a cover crop since 2007, we initiated a couple new cover crop studies, one in 2011 on dry land, one 2012 on irrigated ground. This is the study locations up in the northern rolling plains, this Oklahoma Red River. So the studies I'll be talking about today are here in Hardeman County. Basically, from October 2010 through January 2014, we were about 42 inches behind on rainfall. As I said earlier, we've been in an exceptional drought for the last four growing seasons. We just can't get out of it. Sometimes we're the only area in Texas that have that bright red area. If you look at the drought monitor, that would be us. But monoculture cropping systems are predominant in this area, so continuous cotton or wheat. So some things we looked at, soil sampling for nutrients and carbon, looking at cover crop biomass in content, of course looking at cotton lint yields. We're evaluating soil moisture year-round using neutron probes, looking all the way down about 4.5 feet on 8-inch increments. And all these are replicated in a randomized complete block design. Now, we initiated this with, again, this was the first year of this system going into no-till. So, again, conventional tillage, cotton, wheat, other crops. This is on a research station, so that's the history. So we looked at these different cover crops. Austrian winter field pea at 35 pounds an acre, crimson clover at 15, hairy vetch at 20 pounds per acre, then wheat at 30 pounds per acre. And then the first year we tried sun hemp, planting that in the late spring, giving it about 60 days of growth before termination to see if we could get some high biomass and end fixation from that sun hemp. We plant that. The problem we have is getting the cover crops in time. By the time we defoliate, get the cotton out of the field. We're usually looking at the end of October, which is really a little bit too late for some of these legume species. So they get kind of behind and don't get good fall growth going into the winter. We chemically terminate these cover crops in April before planting each year. This first year, we look at Delta Pine 1044. This is biomass production in spring 2012. Wheat had the highest biomass, followed by the winter field pea and the vetch. Now, this was extremely, a year of exceptional drought. We did not have a cotton yield on this dryland area in 2012, but we did produce some biomass from those cover crops. So following that, with the next year, this became an NRCS CIG project. So we changed a couple things. We had that no-till without a cover, and then our conventional till that's bedded as our kind of our checks, then the no-till with a cover, again with the peas, clover, vetch, and the wheat. And with the NRCS, they're really pushing a multi-species mix. If you want to get a cost share program in Texas, it has to be at least four species in that mix to qualify for EQIP program. So we looked at a mix at 40 pounds per acre that included rye, wheat, turnips, crimson clover, winter field pea, and hairy vetch. 2013, we knocked that down to 30 pounds per acre, basically cut our rye in half was the major change there. Again, we terminate these in April. So biomass production in spring 2013, highest with that mixed species at about 2 tons per acre, followed by the winter field pea, which was also, about a ton per acre, followed by the winter field pea, very close to the mixed species. So you can call this in uptake or in accumulation, whatever you prefer to call it, but the highest as you expect for those legume species, the hairy vetch and the winter field pea. Crimson clover, just planting too late, we do not get good stains and it does not perform well in our higher pH soils and the dry conditions that we've had. So this is stored soil water in the top, basically 4.5 feet. That would be over, this is from December 2012, so this is planted those cover crops around the 1st of October or 1st of November 2012, and this goes through the season through cotton harvest in October 2013. But as you can see, in about March, when those cover crops really start growing, the grass, this is the mixed species down here, but significantly lower soil moisture in the profile with that mixed species crop, which contained rye and wheat. Versus these legume species, which are up here. Now, the wheat was similar. This is our termination date, so this is similar to planting. And then you can see this is our conventional till and no-till up here, which had a little bit higher stored soil moisture than the cover crop species. But that mixed species with that rye really did pull a lot of soil moisture, significantly more moisture out of the profile. So how does that translate to yield? This is lint yield pounds per acre. The really few significant differences, the differences being with that mixed species being lower in the winter field pea than the wheat and rye. So we can't correlate the differences here to stored soil moisture. There's other dynamics going on, which I won't discuss today, but just if you're looking at only soil moisture, that isn't significantly lower with the mixed species, but that didn't necessarily correlate to significantly lower yields compared to all the other cover crops. So biomass production in spring 2014, again, much drier spring in 2014 than previous years, about half of the biomass production, a little over a ton with the Austrian winter field pea compared to about a ton with the mixed species. So it's about 50% of the previous year as far as biomass production in accumulation, again, higher with our legumes. The vetch and the Austrian winter field pea, as you may expect. Again, crimson clover just didn't perform very well. This is stored soil water in, from October 2013 through October 2014. And again, we started with that mixed species cover crop having lower soil moisture. And as we went throughout the year, it never did catch back up. Now, when we got to planting, we had some nice rains, about 4-inch rain in May, and you can see when we did get that rain, everything kind of all got back together, basically. Everything kind of equilibrated. So perhaps we are building some soil structure, increasing infiltration, encouraging infiltration by the incorporation of these cover crops. So that is a possibility. But as we went throughout the year, this is just in the top 2 foot of the soil profile. Again, this is right around termination. This would be the pea and the vetch, which is similar to that mixed species. So some water usage going on there in the top 2 foot of the profile. But again, once we got that rainfall event, you can see it recharge where we have the cover crops, and actually even higher than just the no-till and the conventional tillage that did not have cover crops. So this is our dry land lint yield in 2014. No significant differences among cover crop versus non-cover crop plots in 2014. So irrigated cotton, we're looking at no-till without a cover, conventional till without a cover, and then no-till that has a wheat cover crop of 30 pounds per acre in that mixed species, which again includes rye, wheat, Austrian winter field pea, vetch, and radish and crimson clover. So 4 applications per treatment. Again, biomass in 2013, about 2 ton with that mixed species versus 1 ton with the wheat. And the N content's about the same, so double the accumulation of the mixed species in 2013. Stored soil water, again, with those cover crops, as you expect, mixed species in the wheat in the irrigated system, saw significantly lower stored soil water in the profile entering planting season. Again, this is just after 1 year. When we did begin the irrigation and receive precipitation there 1st of June, you can see we recharged quickly, caught back up. And you can compare the kind of the increase in stored soil moisture. You see the spike here versus you don't see that spike where we didn't have cover crops. So maybe we are building soil structure, building up some carbon and water holding capacity and encouraging some infiltration. Time will tell. Biomass and N uptake in 2014. Got this out of order. Let's go to the yield. This is irrigated cotton yield in 2013. Again, no significant differences statistically here among the treatments. No-till without a cover crop did have numerically higher values, but again, no statistical difference. Biomass and N uptake in 2014, very similar between the wheat and the mixed species. Didn't see much of a difference this past year in biomass production or in uptake. So this is our stored soil water over the past year, October 2013 through October 2014. Again, with the irrigated system, a little bit more forgiving, so things equilibrate throughout the growing season. As you can see, entering March, if I can get that to come up, entering March when those cover crops really start growing, into April, you can see, again, as we saw the previous year, we are using soil moisture significantly lower than where we did not have the cover crop treatments. But again, with that precipitation events there in May, again, saw a nice increase in everything kind of equilibrated out and caught back up. The mixed species actually had a high soil moisture by the end of June. So how did that correspond to lint yields in 2014? Again, no significance in 2014 in regards to lint yield. So that's conventional till, mixed species, the wheat, and then the no-till without a cover crop. Okay. So wrapping up, cover crops can use a significant amount of soil moisture, as you may expect. However, this loss of soil moisture, due to the cover crops during the period prior to planting, does not necessarily translate to reduced lint yields. In some cases, precipitation is captured more efficiently in cover crop plots, especially after termination and early in the growing season if you have a rainfall event then. For each year, there are no significant differences in lint yield between cover crops and non-cover crop treatments in general. So the bottom line question is that we're trying to answer as we go on is what's in it for the producer cover crops to plant that? They're not free, right? So if it's just a wheat cover crop, that can be cheap as $6 to $8 an acre compared to a mixed species cover crop, which NRCS is pushing and suggesting this cocktail mix. That could be $25, $30, $35 an acre. So what's the bottom line for a producer if we're not improving lint yields? So what's the time interval to expect benefits, and will you expect benefits over time? So with that, I'll be glad to take any questions. I'll be here all day if you want to discuss.
We have time for one question, please.
Josh. Well, we typically do. Yes, his question was talking about losing that soil moisture late in the cover crop growing period. So probably as that's reaching a reproductive stage, starting to use a lot of water. So he asked, have we considered terminating earlier? And we have. You know, the problem with usually wheat, we try to terminate at less than 50% heading. There's been some research that's shown you're okay on lint yields not affecting that as long as you terminate before then. Now, when you have this mixed species and you have rye, which matures much earlier than everything else, that's where we really had a problem because that was probably closer to maturity than we would have liked and could have terminated earlier. But there's a balance. If you terminate earlier with that residue in our part of the world, that residue is gone very quickly within the growing season, whereas if you let it mature out a little bit longer, you have more straw, and that residue is going to linger around a lot longer, and I think over the long term, may give you some benefits as far as cover and residue cover on the ground. So, you know, those are all questions we're trying to venture into and answer.
All right, let's give Paul a hand.